In today's chapter, we go ahead with the sounding of the conch shells. So it starts with, then the powerful Bhishma, grandsire and the oldest of the Kauravas, roared like a lion and blew his conch in order to cheer up Duryodhan. Then, following Bhishma, conches, kettles, drums, tabors, trumpets and cow horns suddenly blared forth from the Kaurava side, creating a tumultuous noise. Then stationed in their magnificent chariot, yoked with white horses, Madhava and the son of Pandu also blew their divine conches with furious noise. Krishna blew the conch Panchajanaya, Dhananjaya as in Arjuna blew the Devadatta, and Bhima the doer of terrible deeds blew the great conch Pondra. King Yudhishthira the son of Kunti blew the Antavijaya, Nakula and Sahadeva blew the Sughosha and Mani Pushkapaka conches respectively. The king of Kasi, an excellent archer, Shikhandi, the mighty chariot warrior, Drishtadama, Vrayata and Satyaki, the unconquered, Drupada and the sons of Draupadi, O Lord of the earth, and the sons of Subhadra, the mighty arm, blew their respective conches. The tumultuous sound of the conches pierced the hearts of the members of the Dhritarashtra side, making both the sky and the earth resound. So you see, Bhishma understood the mental agony of Duryodhan. In order to cheer him up, he roared like a lion and blew his conch, which was misunderstood as a signal for commencement of war. The Kaurava army blared forth their various conches and martial and musical instruments, signifying the declaration of war from the sides of the Kauravas. In this verse, Sanjaya had given the reaction of the Pandavas to the war cry raised from the opposite side and the names of the various conches blown by the respective heroes. The most famous among them is the conch Panchajanaya blown by Krishna. The uproar seemed to penetrate the hearts of the Kauravas deeply and abnormally because of their guilty conscience. Metaphorically, the chariot represents the human gross body, the horses are the senses, and their reins are the mind that controls the senses. The charioteer is the guiding spirit of the self or the Atman in human beings. Bhagwan Shri Krishna, the divine charioteer, is the self in all of us. By addressing Dhritarashtra as the Lord of the earth and hinting about the superiority of the Pandava side, Sanjaya implied that as the ruling monarch, he would take a decision even at the catastrophic moment to preserve the integrity of a country from the impending ruinous warfare. But that was not to be. So the next chapter we go on with is Arjuna's desire to survey the two armies. It starts with, then, O Lord of the earth, seeing Dhritarashtra's men being positioned and discharge of weapons about to begin, Pandava, that is Arjuna, whose ensign was Hanuman, raising his bow, spoke the following words to Krishna. The critical situation prevailing just at the moment when the war was about to begin was described. The hero of Mahabharata, Swat Arjuna, arrived at the battlefield and tension prevailed everywhere. Crisis was at its zenith. Arjuna appeared impatient to fire the shot. He raised his bow to position it, and at the crucial juncture he spoke to Krishna the following words, which would turn out to be historic as the starting point for the dialogue between them in the form of the great Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna said, O Achyuta, Krishna, place my chariot in between both the armies so that I may survey those who stand eager to fight. Let me know, on the eve of this battle, with whom I have to fight. For I desire to have a glance at those who are assembled here to fight, wishing to please the perverted son of Dhritarashtra. Arjuna thus expressed his bravery, readiness, impatience, gallantry, determination to face the battle. This is an important stage in the story, because up to this point Arjuna was invincible hero, full of confidence and enthusiasm, with no signs of mental aberrations. However, a little later he became completely changed personality. Next chapter is Shri Krishna enters the scene. Sanjaya said, O Bharata, this Dhritarashtra, thus requested by Arjuna, Krishna placed the magnificent chariot between the two armies in front of Bhishma and Drona and the rulers of the earth and said, O Arjuna, behold all these Kurus assembled here. So As a dutiful rival, Krishna told Arjuna, "Behold, Arjuna, all the Kauravas are gathered here." These are the only words spoken by Krishna in the first chapter of Gita, which proved to be a spark to ignite the process of burning down the false perception of mighty Arjuna. The next chapter is, what did Arjuna say? Then Arjuna saw stationed there in the armies, uncles, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons and friends too. He saw father-in-law, friends and also in both armies. Paunteya, son of Kunti, that is Arjuna, seeing all these relatives around there, became overwhelmed by the supreme compassion and said this sorrowfully. Arjuna, seeing his elders and other relations, teachers, friends and well-wishers, arrayed in the battle, ready to fight, suddenly developed extreme self-pity and compassion. His manliness gave way to faint-heartedness, thinking about the consequences that will follow in waging the war with his kinsmen, which will result in destroying his own race. The valiant hero Arjuna transformed himself into a kinsman of the opposite side, that is, a son, a brother, a student, etc. This change of disposition was verily spontaneous. It was not due to an indiscrimination, but on the account of very absence of it and because of the erroneous understanding called delusion and mental confusion called grief, which prevents right perception of the situation. Arjuna's reaction being the next chapter. Arjuna said, "O Krishna, seeing these relatives and friends gathered here eager to fight, my limbs fail me and my mouth gets parched up, my body trembles and my hair stand on end. The Gandiv, that is the bow, slips from my hand and my skin burns all over. I am unable to even stand steady and my mind is reeling. And I see evil omens, O Keshav." Keshav is Krishna. "I do not see any good in killing my own people in this battle." Arjuna's attention to omens indicates that his mental strength had gone down. It started showing its weakness and instability. The world he was seeing till a short while ago now presented him with a different picture on the account of his change of perception. Subjectivity replaced objectivity on account of his mental confusion. Losing control, he landed in the abyss of ignorance. His words make us think of the loneliness of the man oppressed by doubts and the emptiness from whom the comforts of the human life are slipping away. The sadness in the first experience of those who aspire for the vision of reality. Arjuna's anguish being the next chapter. Arjuna says, "For I do not desire victory, O Krishna, or the pleasures of kingdom. Of what avail is the kingdom to us, O Govinda?" Govinda is Krishna, okay? "Or pleasures or even life. Indifference to acquisition of worldly pleasures is a sign of ethical and spiritual progress. However, Arjuna was far from it. It is only his delusion which is masquerading as a mental achievement. It is nothing but a momentary temptation to adopt the method of renunciation in times of great sorrow and crisis bordering on the escapism from the reality. Those for whose sake we desire kingdoms, enjoyments and pleasure stand here in the battle staking the life and wealth, teachers, fathers and sons and also grandfathers, uncles and fathers-in-law, grandsons and brothers-in-laws and other relatives. O Krishna, though these were to kill me, I do not wish to kill them even for the sake of dominion over the three worlds, leave alone killing them for the sake of the earth. By killing the sons of Dhritarashtra, what pleasures can be ours, O Krishna? Only sin will occur by killing these felons." The term felon refers to the one who sets fire to the house of another, runs with a sword to kill, poison others, plunders the wealth and land of the others, or usurps the wife of somebody else. Duryodhan committed all these crimes against the Pandavas. According to the Earth Shastra, no sin is committed if such felons are killed. But Arjuna, overwhelmed with a sense of sentimental sympathy for his near and dear ones, takes the help of general principle of Dharma Shastra, which forbids the sin of killing one another. He is talking in terms of enlightened selfishness. "Therefore, we should not kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, our relatives, for how can we be happy by killing our own people, O Madhava?" Arjuna said, "O Krishna, though with their intelligence overpowered by greed, they do not see any evil or sin in the destruction of families or hostility towards friends. Why should not we, who clearly see evil in the destruction of a family, learn to run away from this sin? Arjuna was reinforcing his arguments by saving Kaurava's parados due to his attachment for his relatives and friends by putting forward a philosophy of non-resistance to evil. Krishna, in his discourse that will follow, proved the hollowness of these arguments and their dangerous implications. In the destruction of a family, its ancient religious traditional perish, on the destruction of spirituality, lawlessness overtakes the whole family. Dharma or spirituality means duties, rites and ceremonies practiced by the family in accordance with the injunction of the scriptures. War tends to tear us away from our natural home surrounding and uproot us from social traditions which are essence of the human nature, will and experience of the people. And when the lawlessness prevails, O Krishna, the women of the family become corrupt. And when women become corrupted, it results in intermingling of castes. O Krishna, the descendant of Vrishni clan. The idea is that when women are associated with their husband who flouted their family traditions of righteousness, they may also feel emboldened to commit transgressions. Arjuna argued that impiety will predominate in the families because the death of the experienced person in the battlefield will leave none to control and guide them in the good conduct and right behavior. This would lead to the women folk of the families going astray, causing intermingling of the caste. The word caste meant a division of society based on one's mental tendencies, the qualifications for taking up a particular type of work or avocation in the community. The division of society was never intended to be based on mere accident of birth. Therefore, admixture of caste implies people choosing their avocations not suitable to their own inherent aptitude and tendencies, resulting in the loss of professional ethics and excellence. With the intermingling of caste, progeny would not perform Shraddha ceremonies to their deceased ancestors, which would cause them a downfall in the other world. It was feared that the traditions of the individual families called Kula Dharma and those of a social group called the Jati Dharma or Varna Dharma might get disturbed due to social upheaval or as a consequence of war. The import of Arjuna's argument was that when the fundamental harmony of the domestic life gets broken, when purity of the living and sanctity of the thoughts were destroyed, when the idols enshrined in the immemorial traditions were shattered, when the social equilibrium is disturbed, chaos alone will reign supreme in the world. Alas, what a pity that we have resolved to commit a greater sin by being eager to kill our own kin and kith out of greed for the pleasures of a kingdom. It would indeed be better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, armed with their weapons, were to kill me in the battle while I remain unarmed and unresisting. The idea is that instead of committing the heinous sin of killing his own relatives and friends, Arjuna feels that the purification from even such a thought itself will come from the amends in the form of an end to his own life itself. Arjuna, exhibiting a lack of self-confidence, became a victim of emotions instead of master of the situation. In his weak state of mind, he was imputing ulterior motives to a righteous war, which he himself was stoutly defending up to the very day it was to start. He went on to the extent telling Krishna that a non-injury was virtue preferable to defending oneself against others' attacks. He was not aware that his attachment, selfishness and delusions were responsible for his faint-heartedness and cold feet in the face of a crisis. His despondency ultimately culminated in a meek pulling out from the situation in which he finds himself.